As I was saying, last week we talked a little bit about generations, older people, younger people, how sometimes there can be challenges there in terms of maintaining those relationships, and yet how God can work in the midst of those. Well, one of the things that often ends up being a divide between older people and younger people is the issue of technology. Younger people can be excited and optimistic about the possibilities for new technology. Sometimes older people can be ignorant and not really understand or feel out of touch. But it actually goes deeper than that. I mean, some young people can get really, really excited about technology, like getting to the store at 5 a.m. to stand in line for the newest cell phone. I mean, I wouldn't know anything about people like that. I can't imagine being that excited, but I'm told that some people are like that. And there's another kind of crowd of people that's not just ignorant or doesn't know about technology, but they're skeptical. They're wary of what this new technology might do to our lives or how it might damage us. So where do we find ourselves? Should we love technology or should we fear it? There's a lot of people in our world that are asking these types of questions. But what does faith in Christ have to do with any of this? Do we as the people of God have any type of unique response to technology because of what we believe? These are the questions we're going to be kind of investigating this morning that we're going to be talking about. But I want to focus our discussion a little bit because there's a lot of different types of technology. There's medical technology and energy technology and travel. What we're going to talk about this morning is particularly communication technology, technology that allows us to communicate with other people. And because relationships are founded upon the ability to communicate with someone else, we're going to be asking the question how communication technology changes the way we relate to other people. The God we came here this morning to worship is a God of relationship. His two primary calls for his people are to love God and love other people. So if technology changes the way we communicate, then it changes the way we relate. Hold on, let me get this. Hey, Jake, how are you? I'm kind of just giving this sermon. They're kind of sleepy, but I don't know. They're kind of waking up. Yeah, they were singing strong. Yeah, it must be my fault. Oh, well. All right, thanks, man. Good chatting with you. All right, bye-bye. Sorry for the interruption. So where was I? Well, if technology changes the way we relate to other people, does it help or does it hurt? Jake and I kind of had a special moment there. I don't usually get to chat with him while I'm preaching, but I don't know how it was for you. Uh-oh, somebody else. This one wasn't planned. The question we want to be asking is, does technology hurt or hinder our relationships with each other? Does it help love or does it impede love? To answer those questions, we're going to be following the pattern that we've been using for this series. We're going to be following the Spirit as a stone skipping through time, if you will. So we're going to start with Scripture, kind of the primary way God has revealed himself. And we're going to look at what should be a little bit of a unique passage to consider in terms of technology. Then we're going to jump ahead into the 15th century and look at a significant innovation in communication technology that changed everything for the culture around it. And then we're going to talk about today. We're going to ask questions about the types of technologies that we have available to us and how we as the people of God might respond to those. Well, with every sermon in this series, I've been trying to anchor it in one or two biblical passages that really gives us a foundation to think about what God might be saying about this topic. It's not too hard to do with passages like diversity and politics and generations. It's a little harder to figure out what God thinks about Facebook from the Scriptures. So we're going to turn to Galatians 8, because that's where Paul addresses it. That's right, there is no Galatians 8. You can tell by who laughed, who knows their Galatians. But if we think about what communication is, we might have a bit of a way to go about this. So communication is basically the ability for me to get something from within me, some idea, some concept, some emotion, to get that from me to you. It's kind of a transferal of something. So communication technology is the vehicle by which that happens. Okay, it's the vehicle that carries that message from one person to another. Now, if what we believe is about a God who reveals himself to us, we might ask the question, how does he do that? I've recommended on the resource page by your sermon notes a book by an author named Shane Hipps. And he has this to say. He says, Christianity is fundamentally a communication event. Christianity is fundamentally a communication event. And if you look throughout Scripture, you see all over the place God trying to reveal himself to his creation, trying to make himself known. So what technology does he use? Well, he certainly uses voice, right? He speaks. He certainly uses pen and paper. That's why we have this. But I think what we're going to find out is that God needed a new type of technology in order to fully reveal himself. It wasn't the iPhone, but it did start with an I, the incarnation. God came up with this idea of a new way to communicate who he was, and it had never been done in the history of the world before. It's never happened since. So we're going to start off by looking at the first several verses in the Gospel of John. This is John 1. I'm going to read verses 1 to 5, and then jump down to 14 and 18. Because John gives one of the clearest pictures of what happened when God created this incarnation as a way to reveal himself to his creation. This is John 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness has not understood it. Verse 14, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. In verse 18, no one has ever seen God, but God, the one and only, who is at the Father's side, has made him known. Well, there are several things that I think we can observe from this passage. The first thing is the kind of most overriding point of the passage, and that is that Jesus comes in order to reveal who God is. John says that no one has seen God, but Jesus makes him known. Jesus makes God known. Now, I actually have a few relationships with people in my life with whom I've never met in person. I've actually never met our insurance agent in person. We have all of our insurance policies through him. I've emailed with him, had phone conversations. He writes me letters. I write him checks. So we have a type of relationship, but I've never actually met this person. Yet there's technology that allows us to relate. That's what Jesus does for God. John says, no one has seen God, but through Jesus, we behold the glory. Now, later on in the book, John says something else that kind of ties in. He goes a little bit deeper. John 14, in verse 7, John records Jesus saying this, if you really knew me, you would know my Father as well. From now on, you do know him and have seen him. Now, this is a remarkable thing. Jesus says, if you know me, if you have a relationship with me, then you know the Father. And even us who haven't seen Jesus, and yet we know him, Jesus says, because you know me, you have seen the Father, the God whom no one has seen, and yet we have seen him. through Jesus. So you might say that Jesus as a form of communication technology works, right? He gets it right. That's not always the case. There are times we're well familiar with communication technology that doesn't work. We're familiar with things where you try and communicate and it doesn't quite get through. And John actually continues in chapter 1 and says that not everybody does get the message. See, in verse 5, he says, "The light," that's Jesus, "shines in the darkness," that's the world, "but the darkness has not understood it." So Jesus as a form of communication technology reveals who God is to his creation, and yet some of them don't get the point. Some of them don't know God. Have you ever called somebody's cell phone and if this is you, you just have to know this is a pet peeve of mine, so you can go out this afternoon and correct it. But you don't record a greeting on your cell phone. So instead of kind of being greeted by their voice and saying, you know, blah, 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 isn't here, you can leave me a message, you get this nice woman's voice who says, 650 dot, 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 dot isn't available, but you can leave them a message. And you're never quite sure, well, did I dial the number wrong? I don't know for sure this is this person's phone because I haven't heard their voice. And so you leave a message, but you kind of try and be a little vague because if it's some random person, you don't want to leave too much information. You know this experience? So don't let that be you, okay? If there's one thing you remember from this sermon, go change your voicemail. But this is the experience of leaving a message, of sending something, and yet you're not sure if it's going to be received. And this is a bit of what happens with Jesus. God sends his son, he sends this communication technology to the world, and yet some people don't get it. The email was lost, the call gets dropped. Whatever happens, the communication fails. And we can recognize it's not the fault of Jesus. It's not that he was faulty technology, that he broke. But even perfect technology doesn't result in perfect communication. Right? Even if I were capable of preaching the clearest message in the world, which of course I'm not, but you could walk out of here confused because other things were on your mind or you hadn't slept the night before or whatever. Perfect technology doesn't guarantee perfect communication. So we've said that Jesus makes God known, but not for everybody, that some people don't know God. Well, there's one other thing I want us to notice. John starts out this passage by saying that Jesus was with God. He actually goes on to make 5 references to refer to Jesus being in the presence of God the Father. And then he goes on to make 2 references to Jesus being in our presence. He says, Jesus, who was at the Father's side, present with him, has come and made his dwelling among us. So we might conclude that there's something important about presence. There's something about being there that even perfect technology prefers or makes use of. And I think we kind of get that, right? It's odd that I have never seen my insurance agent. And I'll bet some of you who are insurance agents are going to come up after the service and rebuke me and offer your services because I know you. But there's something about presence. Right? Think about online dating as another example. This is kind of a new thing, and in a sense, it's a misnomer because most people I know don't actually date online. They meet someone online in order to date in person, right? You want to be with somebody. The goal is to go out to dinner with somebody eventually, not to purely have a virtual relationship. So we recognize there's something about being together that's important. John says something, actually, in one of his letters about this. This comes towards the end of his life. He's writing this letter. This is actually the letter with the fewest number of verses in the New Testament. It's a short letter, and John says this at the end. I have much to write to you. He wants to say more. This is 2 John, verse 12. But I do not want to use paper and ink. Instead, I hope to visit you and talk with you face to face so that our joy may be complete. Now, this is interesting because what John does is he makes use of the technology that's available to him. He has paper and ink, so he writes them a letter. But he says, this technology can't quite suffice for the experience I want to have with you. So I'm going to wait until we can be face to face with each other. Technology is useful. It can bridge a gap. It can communicate something, but there's something about presence that's important. So let's summarize. We've seen that Jesus makes God known, and yet we've seen that that doesn't always come to pass. And in the midst of all of this, in the midst of this communication that's happening, there's something about being there that seems invaluable, that just can't be duplicated. Well, let's jump forward now. We're going to follow the next skip of the stone, and we're going to move forward into the 15th century. We're going to look at a time in church history where communication technology changed very rapidly and ended up changing everything about the world. Around about 1436 in Germany, there was a man who started putting together some pieces to work on an invention that would end up having a huge impact on the world. This man's name was Johannes Gutenberg, and he was working on a machine that would print books. Now, up to this point in history, most books had been copied out by hand. The most popular common book was the Bible, so it's a good standard of measure. The Bible took one monk working full-time approximately 1 year to copy out, okay? Now, I've done the read through the Bible programs in a year, and that's a lot of reading, right? But I've never written the Bible out for an entire year, working full-time. Can you imagine the amount of energy that took? But everything changed when this man, Gutenberg, did what good inventors do. He pulled a bunch of existing technology together, like a wine press that had been in use for a millennia and a half, some other pieces that were out there, added in a few of his own, and came up with the printing press. And all of a sudden now he could make books thousands of times faster than a monk sitting in a study. By 1480, this is about 40 years after the first printing press, there were 100 printers across Europe using these machines. By 1500, 20 million books had been published. That would be 400,000 monks working for 50 years to print that many books. So everything changed so quickly. And what the printing press did is it allowed ideas to go forward faster and farther than before. Ideas used to be carried by bicycle, kind of plugging away, but now they're on jet planes, going fast and going everywhere. See, they're going fast because I can write something, I can print it up, and all of you can be reading the same thing that I've said within a matter of a couple weeks with the printing press. Going far because those copies can then be spread out, can be sent in 100 different directions, and everybody across Europe can be reading the same ideas very shortly after they were written. Something like this has never happened in the history of the world. For example, Martin Luther, during the early 16th century, within a period of 2 years, distributed 300,000 tracts with his new ideas about theology around Europe. And you know that he had a pretty significant impact on the way people thought. So after the printing press, ideas moved fast and far. And most scholars will credit the Protestant Reformation with the invention of the printing press. They'll say the printing press allowed democracy, that it created capitalism, that it created the scientific revolution, that all these things were made possible just because now ideas could spread out quickly and far. Marshall McLuhan is one of the foremost authors on media and helping people to think about how that affects culture and how that affects us. He wrote a book called The Gutenberg Galaxy, where he credits the birth of the modern age to the invention of the printing press. Says everything began with this one invention. And his point is one that others have made, but he says that technology changes us, that a new vehicle to communicate actually changes the nature of our relationships. It actually changes us. Technology changes us. It's not neutral. So Jesus, as a form of communication technology, wasn't just a better book. It wasn't just that he said the same things in a different way. But the very fact that God chose this way to reveal himself says something about who God is. The vehicle he chose changed the message itself. And we recognize this in our own lives. You know, I recognize this when we got married and we had to write thank you notes. Now, in my perspective, if somebody gives me a gift, I see them and I say, thank you for your gift. Done, right? Thank you has been accomplished. But apparently the vehicle itself is important in our culture. You have to have a little card that folds from the top and has thank you written, and you have to write a nice little note. You have to write the same one to everybody that gave you a gift. The vehicle itself matters. It changes the nature of the communication. And in fact, it changes us. So what happened with the printing press then? What changed with this new invention? Well, what happened is the world got bigger and smaller at the same time. First of all, the world got bigger. See, before the printing press, I lived in a small community. My family, the people that lived around me. Unless I was part of an elite class or I was clergy, I wouldn't have been able to read. So all the information I received got to me through this community. The only time I ever heard the Bible was when I went to church and heard it read to me in Latin. So my world was small. It was the people I knew. The ideas that came into that community were well kind of filtered and screened. There were few new ideas that I had to interact with. But now the printing press is churning out these books. So I decide to learn to read. And now I'm sitting in my living room reading a copy of Erasmus. And these ideas that I would never have been exposed to before are opening up my world. Things from far away all of a sudden seem to have an impact on me. My world has gotten huge overnight. And in a lot of ways, this was a good development in history. Literacy skyrocketed. People started having copies of the Bible in their homes, in their own language. But we have to realize that every change is actually a trade. Something is gained and something is lost. So there were a lot of things gained when the printing press came around, but there were some things that were lost. This little community that I used to be a part of seemed confining to me now, seemed old-fashioned. Going to church and hearing the Bible read didn't matter anymore. I could read it for myself. Why would I memorize the Bible if I had a copy of it in my living room? This culture that used to be defining who I was has changed. Something about me has been lost. So my world got bigger, but it also got smaller. Because all of a sudden, people that used to be far away were now in my living room. The printing press, one of the things it did was to invent the category of the bestseller. Desiderius Erasmus was one of the most popular authors during that time. He was a Catholic theologian and popular writer. He sold over 750,000 copies of his books during his lifetime. So here I am now, sitting in my living room, reading Erasmus. And I have a new kind of relationship with this guy. His ideas affect my life. Many of us have favorite authors, and we credit them with a lot of the things we think and a lot of the ways we see the world. We have real relationships with these people. And yet, it was a type of relationship that wouldn't have been possible a generation ago. Something is gained, but again, what about the people that I used to sit in my living room talking with? Those relationships have changed now. I've lost something of that. Now they have to compete with Erasmus and these new ideas and my new sense of individuality that I've gained because I have a new way of looking at the world. So we recognize then that when technology comes in, it changes the world in good ways and some in bad ways. And the question then we want to be asking is, what about us? We obviously live in an age where technology is changing at an unheard of pace. Most scholars will say nothing has happened like what's happening now since the invention of the printing press. the types of technologies that are being invented and used are changing culture just like they were 500, 600 years ago. So how do we respond? Are they good changes? Is it good that I can chat with Jake on my cell phone instead of preaching to you? Or are they bad changes? Well, first, I want us to consider this question of why our culture might be so enthralled with technology. And I want to suggest that it's actually a sign of a good thing. Because I think the reason we love technology is because we have this deep down desire to be known and to know someone else. We understand that we were created for relationship. That the deepest call of our hearts is that we might be able to open ourselves up to somebody else. They might see us for who we truly are. And they might welcome us. They might know us and embrace us. So I think we get excited about technology because we live in a technical culture. And so we think, if I'm not known, the problem must be a technological one. Maybe with the next invention, maybe with the next way of expressing myself, I can finally scratch that itch. People will finally know the real me. I can finally open up, and that longing that I've had to be known will finally be met. And we, of course, as the people of God, know something about being known because we worship a God who says he knows us fully. And we know him, and he embraces us, even with full knowledge of who we are. So we recognize the problem is not a technical one that needs to be overcome by technology. The problem is a spiritual one. And these longings that our culture feels to be known are longings that point them ultimately not towards the next piece of technology, but towards the return of the Messiah, when he will finally complete this work. And I think this is what leads to polarized responses toward technology, because some people think that technology is going to save them. It's going to meet their deepest desire. And they get so excited about it, they begin to worship it as if it were a god. And then other people recognize that and they say, whoa, that's a false god. Don't worship that. Technology is not going to do that. In fact, if that's the response you have, this must be a dangerous, dangerous thing. But I think that we in the church, as the people of God, actually know what technology is. We know that it's not a god. It's just a phone. It's just a computer. It's not to be worshiped, but it's also not to be feared. And we are empowered to use technology for what it was meant to do. We can use technology to be with people. We can recognize that it's a tool that can be used to enable relationship in a deeper way. And there are ways that technology can be used for relationship that have never been possible before. We can have video conferences with ministry partners in India and connect with them and plan out our plans for serving God face to face in a way. We can send little messages to each other. I can text my wife and tell her something in a non-obtrusive way and just remind her that I'm there. I can reconnect with friends that I used to go to elementary school with and kind of hear about their lives, not have an intimate relationship with them, but maintain some connection with them. These are new categories of relationships that didn't exist before. And they change who we are because they change the way we relate. And there are possibilities there for God to work in amazing ways. New technology can allow us to be known in a new way. But new technology can also allow us to hide. It can also allow us to prevent people from knowing who we are. It can also separate us from people. There's a comedian who told a joke that there's a new application for the iPhone that actually translates babies crying for you. So you can turn on this application and hold it up to the baby, and it will tell you what the baby's crying means. And it turns out that when you use this application, what most babies are saying is, put down your iPhone and pay attention to me. So we're kind of aware that technology can pull us away from people. It can distance us from people. It can allow us to hide. We read a book recently about young girls growing up in our culture and talked about the effects of cyberculture and how young people growing up now have to figure out who they are internally, come up with some sense of identity, but at the same time, everybody has this public online persona that they need to manufacture and maintain and manage. And so at the same time as you're wrestling with questions about who I am, what are my passions, where will I stand, where will I give, at the same time as you're determining your interior identity, you're having to create this public identity. And that tears people, and it provides this opportunity to hide and get confused about, am I just what people see of me online? There's also the possibility to treat technology itself as something that's wonderful rather than seeing it as a tool. It's like buying this shiny new wrench and polishing it and hanging it on the wall and looking at the wrench and saying, what a well-designed wrench. How wonderful. But you never use it to turn a bolt. And there's that tendency with technology to love it for itself rather than to say, here's a tool meant to get me to be with people, to connect me relationally, authentically. And I'm optimistic that we as the people of God have the ability to rise above this. We can recognize what technology is for. We don't have to fear it. We don't have to throw it off. And yet we can be wise about it. A few weeks ago, we compared poverty to a river that people are swept away in. And you might think of technology the same way. It's this great river, and a whole number of people are just swept up in it, not thinking, just enjoying what's going on, not realizing that it's a complicated river. There are some people, and some Christians have this attitude, that we need to stop this river. We need to stop the progress of technology because of these dangers. Let's build a huge dam. But those things never work. Once the printing press had been invented, you couldn't stop the cultural changes. But I think what we can do is we can build rafts. We can ride this river. We can navigate the good parts and the dangerous parts wisely. The Spirit can lead us as the people of God to use technology with the ultimate goal of relationship. That might expand some of our categories. It might mean there are new ways to have new types of relationships. And it might say there are ways to limit the use of technology in favor of a more face-to-face relationship. But those are the questions I believe the Spirit of God will lead us through as we interact with these issues. Technology will not ruin our world. It will not destroy our communities. It will not destroy our souls. But neither will it save us. Neither will it offer us that which we most desire, to be known and to be loved. It won't take away the insecurities I carry around. I can fabricate some different version of myself, but ultimately, that's not true personal knowledge. Our world is excited for technology because what they want is deep, intimate relationship. We know where you get that is here. In the church, through a God that knows us and a God that works among us to know each other in powerful ways. Technology is no substitute for God, but neither does it compete with him. It's just a tool. And we can grow in our ability to use this tool wisely, recognizing the benefits, being aware of the dangers. We must resist the temptation to either worship it or fear it. God calls us to respond to technology with wisdom, remembering to be with people. Remembering relationship is ultimately the goal. That's what God did. He wanted to be with us, and that's what we can use technology for. Let me pray. Father, thank you. Thanks that we live in a time in our culture, a time in world history that's full of change, full of dynamic new things that we get interesting things to ask questions about, and that our task of following you is full of newness, confusion sometimes, but new opportunities. I pray that you would lead us, that your Spirit would lead us as your people to engage with our world, to see technology as a tool, but to maintain the priority of relationship, and to ask good questions about how does technology allow relationship and how does it impede relationship. We need your help for this, God, because there's so many issues, there's so much confusion out there. Help us to walk through this with you. Help us ultimately to love you more and to love each other more. We ask all of this in the name of your Son, Jesus, who makes you known to us. Thank you, God, our Father. Amen.